a Super Bowl champion.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl.
The Packers' all-time leading scorer.
A game winner for Mason Crosby.
It's time for the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Nellis on the Wisconsin Sports Radio Network. Powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook and on the free Odyssey app.
Hey, welcome into hour number two of the Mason Crosby Show. Mason Crosby, Tommy Wirtz, Mitch Nellis with you. Efforting Peter Bukowski, Locked On Packers, joining us. And I know some of the things that we'll get into when we do grab him. Mason, when Matt LaFleur was asked about keeping his offensive staff largely the same, he said, we got to strip everything down and start like it's year one all over again. I'm sorry, what? I get that every year is its own year, and that you come in with a different attitude, a different mindset.
It's hard to do with the same people. Yeah.
Right. But if you keep everybody the same, doesn't that doesn't that kind of get in the way, or isn't it?
Yeah, you can't just forget things. You always carry something. And that's what experience is, right? If you want to go back to year one and strip it down, then you're basically saying that you don't like how they coach or like what they did last year, right? If you don't like how they did it, then why keep people around? It's an interesting mindset. Yeah, that's fascinating. Because yes, once again, you carry all of that experience along with you. And it's supposed to be a good thing, not a bad thing, right? Like, you're supposed to use that experience to grow and get better, not to say like, well, we've had experience now for the last 6 years, 7 years. Let's just forget all of that and go back to where we started. Let's become rookies again. I'm not sure that's usually ever anyone's mindset of, I want to go back and be like I was as a first-time coach or a rookie. I don't think that's usually how people approach things after years of success.
I mean, let's flip it to like the Brewers. Like, the Brewers could, you know, won 97 games last year, but obviously were a little embarrassed against the Dodgers. And it was an amazing season. Beat the Cubs in the playoffs, but lost to the Dodgers. What if Murphy come back this year and be like, oh, we're going to strip everything down and like start all over? It's like, no, you have all these relationships. You have all this experience. Like, don't you want to build on it and do better, but not strip it down and start over? Like, I think that's kind of the weird part of it.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, maybe he's just talking about some of their offensive schemes and how they are going to approach, you know, certain situations and things like that, because you do, yes, you're going to always evaluate and always adjust and change, but I don't like just throwing, you know, every, like, the baby out with the bathwater type deal, right? Like, you're not just throwing everything down the line. Like, you just nibble at the edges. At this point, you've established something, you've had success. Like, don't go start new. Just nibble at the edges a little bit. And that's like that would have been a actually more appropriate response with keeping the full staff. Is like, we're close. Yes. We're just going to, you know, we're just going to tie down some things, nibble at the edges.
We got some tweaks.
But we kept our whole staff, so we're going back to the beginning. It's like, well, no.
Weird.
Yeah, but, I don't know.
Yeah. Joining us now on the guest hotline, powered by Gruber Law, one call, that's all. Our good friend from Locked On a Packers podcast. He is, always well-coiffed. Peter Bukowski. Peter, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good. I was so interested. I was glad I got on a little early because I could hear the opening to that segment, because I actually took what Matt LaFleur was saying about stripping it down in a different way than at least Mason's initial reading of it, which was to say that he mentions details. And I think when I watch this team, I see a team that is not always on its details the way that it needs to be. And that was something like a couple of years ago, Tom Brady said, oh, the intermediate passing game is not very detailed. And I was just like, oh man, like that is as critical a thing as Tom Brady has or will ever say about someone. Like he doesn't say anything critical ever. And that was like, oh, okay. And you see some of the, like, Matthew Golden will make big plays. He'll also run the wrong routes. Dontavian Wicks for 3 years has had issues being in the right place at the right time. for the first half of the season, they couldn't pick up a simple TE stunt on the offensive line because guys are changing positions. Guys are, you know, they're doing this, they're doing that. Oh, right guard today. Oh, right tackle today. And part of that is injuries too, right? But what I heard was a coach saying, we need to make sure everyone knows on every play what the responsibilities are and why. And really, and when I hear strip it down, I think that everyone just like the base concepts have to be watertight. Everyone has to know all the time or this doesn't work. That's what I like. Let's try. We don't need to be so cute. That's what I hear him saying. And we need to make sure that the foundation is stronger so that it doesn't crack in the fourth quarter, right?
Yeah, and the old – uh-oh. Sorry. Was I still talking? My headphones went out, so I couldn't hear myself. I'm like, everything's gone.
Weird. Yeah. Uh-oh.
I know.
No, you're still here.
I'm good now. We're good now. So, whenever I was thinking about it too is, you know, you talk about that in the demand. Like, who is – like, which coaches and when are they going to demand at a high – like, at a level – that is worthy of professional football, right? Like, if you don't get it right, you don't, you know, you're not gonna be on my offense. If you're running the wrong routes, you will not be out there. If you're doing these things, you will not step on my field. There has to be a demand there too from the coach's side. And then I remember hearing guys from San Francisco talking about their offense. And how it's like a, you know, it's a graduate level. Like if you're not studying and learning, it will pass you by and you will look lost out there. And, yeah. and coach, you know, Shanahan won't put you on the field if you don't know your stuff. So if LaFleur implements that style, I think that would be amazing because it does need to be like, here's our expectations. Here's your responsibility. Here's why this is all happening and understand that. And now, if you don't dive in deeper, you're going to be left behind, and we have no place for you on this squad, right?
Yeah, I remember. I think it was Ryan Grant was talking about the implementation of outside zone for Kyle Shanahan was like you'd spend a week on outside zone, and I think that's kind of what Matt LaFleur is getting at here. Like, I think what they were hoping was they'd have continuity with this team because remember the 2025 team, not all that different than the 2024 team, that they could just say, okay, this is the, you've got year two of Jeff Hafley for a lot of the core offensive pieces. They were in what, year three of this offense. I think that they believe they could just take that proverbial next step. You're adding nuances, you're adding layers. And what inevitably happens every year is, well, remember that's, it's like in high school, right? You're all of a sudden you're in, you know, third year algebra and you're like, yep. Wait, what is the deal? How do we do that one thing again?
You have to relearn most of it every year.
Right. And I think that maybe there was some taking for granted of the knowledge base. And you know, that is, I think, partially normal too. So I don't think Matt LaFleur is suddenly going to be like, okay, the offense is now going to be only outside zone, inside zone RPOs. Like I don't think what they're thinking here, but I think there's value potentially in the youngest team in the league again. I think that this is about okay, let's simplify everything. He saw last year with Jeff Hafley what you could take with the concepts are the same. You dress it up differently, but you're ultimately always going to be here. I think that maybe the offense could benefit from some of that, and I think streamlining this carries in, and we can get into this part of it if you want. But I thought the comments about guys not understanding their roles is actually tied directly to this idea of stripping the offense down. Because I think when everyone understands what is expected of them and what is demanded of them, it makes it easier to key in on your details. Because you don't have a bunch of Alfreds trying to save Gotham, right? You just need mm-hmm. Batman to save Gotham. You can't have everyone feeling like they've got to be Batman. And so I think this year there's some guys who maybe wanted a different role on the team, wanted to be able to do some different things. Quay Walker said on the record he felt like he was not allowed to do the right things. We know Romeo Doubs was suspended for a week because he was frustrated with the game plan. Malik Heath had some issues, and he's not on the team anymore either. And there may be guys currently on the roster. I assume Mason, you've been in locker rooms with guys who were good players and bad players who thought I should be doing more. I want 53 guys to feel like I could be doing more to help the team, because there's a mindset of like, hey, I believe in my abilities. I want to be out there. But I think it is really useful when you have your best players. It's one of the downsides of having a team full of good players, not great players, because everyone thinks they should be doing more.
They think they're right on the verge of being that next, you know, that next star, right? And so
right.
In Green Bay, like the culture,
when Devontae was the guy, no one thought they should be Devontae, because everyone knew Devontae was Devontae.
And I was just about to bring up, so we had Randall Cobb on a few weeks ago, and he talked specifically to this. He gets drafted. He's, you know, highly touted. He has all this skill set, but he's sitting behind James Jones and, you know, Driver and Jordy and, you know, all these guys. And he's like, I made sure I knew every position. If any of those guys ever were dinged up or I got tapped to go in, I was going to know exactly not just what route to run, but what everyone else was doing and why I was running this certain route to clear out a guy, to do certain things. So we're talking about that. And that's, I think, my 2012 season, as everyone knows, was a bad year. And, you know, I learned so much from that. And we're talking about what LaFleur is saying, where in 2011, it was my best season to date. And all I, you know, and my mindset going into 2012 was recreate that. Just try to have a season like that, maybe get a little bit better. Like, how do I do that? And I stopped like trying to do all the details and like work on like all the little things that go along. And I think maybe that's what's happened here under LaFleur. And last year, it was like you were saying, they said, well, we had some really good things. We're just going to add to it. And like everyone should know conceptually, we have all the same receivers and players and running backs, offensive linemen. And let's be real, 3 months is a long time. You come back in April, you've forgotten more than you've probably retained. You almost have to say, all right, here is our base offense. We're going to build it from there. Once we understand that for a week or two, now we start adding other concepts. And like if LaFleur is seeing that, that's a real positive thing.
I remember coming back from high school. It just sparks this memory in my mind. Coming back from high school, and I forgot my locker code. I've been gone for like 3 weeks.
I know.
You're trying to learn so much that it's like that is something that can happen to you. It's also something we used to tease Mike McCarthy about in the media from the outside. And you know, you can tell us or not, Mace, if you were doing it in the locker room with Mike McCarthy. But what did Mike McCarthy say in every damn press conference he ever gave? We have to get back to the fundamentals.
Yep.
And I think this team, they really do. Like it's just like basic offensive line play. Do you know who to block? Basic receiver stuff. Do you know who to cover? Or what route to run? Basic cornerback stuff. Do you know who to cover? Like that stuff is the stuff that seems to be falling through the cracks. The talent is really not at this point a question with this team.
No.
And that's what makes them ultimately so frustrating.
Yeah, it's little mistakes. And then, like you said, it's knowing exactly. And then also a culture of just because you make a couple plays, like that doesn't mean that you are the guy now. Like that is like becoming the guy is consistency over a period of time. I think too many times somebody makes a big play, scores a touchdown, and then all of a sudden we lose sight of them because their mindset changes and there's nobody there checking and like and saying, hey, this is your role. It's awesome that you did that, but like we need you here. And if LaFleur can address that, like he said in his press conference, that is a mindset of what they're going to try to do, be more like clear with the communication of roles. Those were positives in my mind.
All right, I got a question. Peter Bukowski, Locked On Packers, joining us here on the Mason Crosby Show. Why is this something Matt LaFleur saying now? Like, isn't this common?
Well, we haven't heard from him in 3 months.
Right. Well, that's true. But like, why are these? Like, is he just evolving and learning as a leader? And he kind of sucked before, but now he's like he was good, always a good football mind, but maybe not a good leader. And maybe he's trying to figure out how to be a better leader of men at this point. Like what is going on that this is what he's talking about now.
Come off as an insensitive metaphor, but I think it's what I'm going through currently. So it's where my mind went. I'm a parent of two young kids. The parenting I needed to do with my 5-year-old was not the same parenting I needed to do with my 3-year-old.
Yep.
And so it changes.
Good point.
So the way you view a team in 2023 and 2024, when you're a young ascending team, the way you need to coach them, the way you grade their performance almost on a curve is not the same as the last 2 years, or I guess let's just take 2025, when it's go time. It's traded for Micah Parsons. It's now you're good enough to go win the Super Bowl. And I think that changes the expectations. That changes the inputs and the outputs here for Matt LaFleur. And you go, okay, well, now, not when you're young and you're winning and you're ascending and you're growing and you're building, everyone gets to go, hey, we're in this together. And now it's year three for Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks. And it's year four for Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson. And Keyshawn Nixon's now been in the building for a couple of years. And Carrington Ballantyne has been in the building. And Quay Walker has been in the building. And Devontae Wyatt. This young team, all of a sudden, they're thinking about contracts. They're thinking about what comes next. And the dynamic changes. It has to. And the coaching has to change with it. And now you're that core. I mean, this is, remember, they totally reset this team in 2023. They're on the verge of having to not totally reset it again, but go through a major overturning of this roster. The 2022 class is, a lot of those guys are gone now. You're going to go through it again in 2023. You have to now coach for the team that you have. And this is a team that has Super Bowl expectations. They're getting paid. Some of these guys now are, when they were on that 2023 team, there were no $50 million players. There was no Micah Parsons level player. There was no Xavier McKinney level players on that team. Josh Jacobs, veteran level players. Yeah. Now you're adding veterans like Javon Hargrave, Zaire Franklin. It's a different football team. And so I think you just have to coach them differently. Right, Mace?
And it's up to those guys to set the tone, right? Like, they are now the highest paid players on the team. They're the guys that can just say, hey, this is how it's going to go. Like, we're, you know, You follow us, and like, we'll lead you to a spot where you can become the next guy or the superstar. Like, guys need to, like, in sports, it's so important to have something to chase after, right? Like, I think that's, like, you've never made it. If you become a professional, that's just the starting point. Like at Micah Parsons, he feels like that type of guy. Like, he's made it, but he's never made it. He's still hunting. And you need more of those guys. And I feel like sometimes in that culture, the last couple of years, it's just felt at times like guys stopped chasing something in there. And here, I want to ask this question. I'm not in that locker room, so I don't know what Jordan Love's exit interviews are with LaFleur. And you know, when I was there, they were quick, and you know, he was the backup quarterback and those things. So, you know, whenever he was with Aaron's exit interviews, we sometimes would have to, like, everyone would get bumped from the first day because, like LaFleur, McCarthy, everyone would have, they'd sometimes have 4 hour plus, like, end of season exit interviews. Like, talk about an air, like, and so I don't know what Jordan Love's situation is, but think about LaFleur going from Aaron Rodgers, who is very opinionated, had like everything like laid out what he wanted, and then seemingly like Jordan Love more of a, you know, like, seemingly more chill, like, doesn't let things kind of, you know, rattle, like, everything is kind of just, he moves along. And I wonder what that dynamic, you know, is. And it almost feels like LaFleur felt like he needed to take on more whenever Aaron wasn't there. Have you felt any of that?
Yeah, and I'm glad that with where you landed on that was ultimately that was Rodgers driven, because the whole time you're saying that, I'm like, that's definitely because Rodgers had a lot to say. And because, right, he's a thoughtful guy. Like, yeah. I bet he spent the first hour of those conversations just having a conversation. Like, he strikes me as the kind of guy that's just going to talk and likes to do that. And that's part of that cerebral part of him is part of what made him one of the best we've ever seen play that position.
For sure.
Do you guys realize how little we know about Jordan Love right now? Like, we don't really know. Like, we know he's got a wife. We actually know what his wife looks like.
We know who his wife is.
Her name isn't Blue Childfire. All right. Yeah. Right,
so we know it. More about him than we know about Aaron.
We know they're having a baby. And we know that they have a very public, you know, love affair. And we know he's like friends with some of the guys on the team. But beyond that, we don't really know that much. And we have to remind ourselves back in, if I'm trying to do the math, like 2011, we didn't know that much about Aaron Rodgers then either, right? Like, he was a very private guy, did not do a lot of interviews. And so that's part of it. I think Jordan Love says even less in interviews than Aaron Rodgers did. But well, he's
different.
I would like,
it's different how Jordan Love approaches it. He definitely, I feel like, comes at it more from like a football side. Like, it's, you know, football, locker room, all that. Aaron would come at it from like this kind of heady, nuanced space, right? Everything right. he said. And Jordan's more direct on like, you know, football and relationship stuff.
And he seems beloved in the locker room. Everyone I've talked
to, he's a great teammate. Like, yeah.
Jordan is the dude and is viewed that way in the locker room. And so it's not a, you know, a one size fits all approach to being a quarterback or a leader. But I loved what Joe Thomas said the other day on radio. And that was, I want him to go in and demand, like, this is what the offense has to be.
Yep.
And I wonder how Matt LaFleur would respond to that, because LaFleur has said all the right
things. Take more ownership of the offense, no doubt.
Well, and when Brian Gutekunst said last offseason, so not this past February, but the February before, what he said was, I want to see Jordan Love take more control of games. Mm-hmm. I felt that was as much a signal to Matt LaFleur as it was to Jordan Love.
Yeah.
And in the first part of the season, we didn't see that, right? Like,
because LaFleur has to let him too, right? Like, he's got to kind of unlock it a little bit.
LaFleur has to let him. I felt like the season fundamentally changed on Thanksgiving. The multiple fourth downs, the play to end the game, the overall aggression in that game. And I felt like that carried through. Think about the Bears game.
Yeah. They lit it up on offense. Yeah.
And on fourth down, fourth and goal, you, like the touchdown to Romeo Doubs, didn't everyone think they were going to kick? Like, no way, Matt LaFleur is going to kick there to go up three scores. No, they went for it, and they really put their foot on the neck of the Bears in that moment. They needed to press a little harder than they did ultimately, right? But you know, like, I think that changed, and I would be surprised now if we go into 2026 and we don't see an offense more akin to that, especially because we don't know what this offensive line is going to be from a run game perspective. We don't know health-wise where Josh Jacobs was not at 100% last year. I think Matt LaFleur would like to play a more balanced offense, but every third down, like, you could say overall you felt like Matt LaFleur did not play like he had confidence in Jordan Love, but watch how they call it the game for Jared Goff or Caleb Williams on third down. Even Jared Goff at this point in his career, it's still a lot of screens. It's draws.
Yeah.
It's cutesy stuff. Whereas Jordan Love, it's go play quarterback. Go figure it out. It's third and eight, and he's got one of the furthest A-dots in the league on third down. It's why they were the best third down team in the league last year, because they said, Jordan, go play quarterback. And he did it at an extremely high level. Make it easier for him, Matt, on first and second down, so he doesn't have to be Superman on third down. And maybe you're going to get the best version of this offense. I think they're so close, guys. That's what I think makes this so frustrating. I'm sure it's frustrating for the players and the coaches too, because they have it all within them. They got to find that Goldilocks zone, and then you got to get lucky with some health. Like, you need your best guys. I just saw a stat. You know, the Packers had one of the highest number of different individual starters in the league last year, and three of the four teams that had the fewest were the final. Three of the final four teams in the league last year. Like, sometimes it really is just that simple.
For sure. We got Peter Bukowski, Locked On Packers, joining the Mason Crosby Show. Last thing I have for you is kind of on that. And I talked about it last offseason, and I do think Jordan took another step. But like Joe Thomas, like everyone, you know, he needs to now find his voice. And yeah. Like you said, Aaron Rodgers was not Aaron Rodgers until after the Super Bowl in that 2011 season. And then there's fans, there's people that are like, they'd be wondering why him and Coach McCarthy would sometimes have issues, you know, like have some conflict and things like that. It's because Aaron was heavily invested in that offense. And so if it didn't look and act the way that he like envisioned it, he in a sense had the right to say, this is not like what the plan was, right? And so I think Jordan Love, that's his next step, is to say, hey, I want to be heavily involved. This is my, you know, my team, my show as well. Like, but you got to put yourself on the line, right? Because now, once you step into that ring and that space as a player, like, more weight is on you. But then he can also demand more. I feel like Jordan needs to demand more of his guys. you know, it, maybe that's not his strength as a leader, but if you take ownership of that offense, he can demand that this is how it needs to be. Guys, y'all are my boys, you're my teammates, I love you, but it has to look a certain way, and we will go win a championship, and I will lead you there. That's the type of leader he needs to morph into, I think, to take this team to the next level.
I think, too, the coaching staff, they're understanding the body language stuff with Jordan Love and a lot. Like, you remember the Arizona game where it looked like they weren't going to go for that last fourth down, and Jordan Love's coming off the field, and LaFleur changed his mind? And LaFleur admitted after the game that he could see how pissed off Jordan was coming off the field and was like, okay, we'll go for it. Like, I think you do need that sometimes, that give and take. Like, it doesn't always have to be the coach or the quarterback coming over and MFing the coach and saying, we got to go. There has to be that give and take of, I mean, he wants to go for it. Obviously, he wants to, because it's not always verbalized. Like, we know about every relationship that works at a high level, you have to understand nonverbal communication. You have to anticipate the needs of the other person. That's true in a marriage. That's true in any business relationship that you have. And so, like, I think that's part of this too, is Matt LaFleur can almost anticipate now how Jordan Love is going to react to certain things. And I do think Jordan Love has grown into himself as a leader where he can speak up in the locker room in any way that he wants to.
Oh, for sure.
And I think he should feel that way. And I don't want to say I think he should do it more, because I don't know exactly how much he's doing it now, but I will tell you, everyone I've talked to on and off the record about Jordan Love as a leader raves about Jordan Love as a leader.
Oh yeah, they'll go to battle with him for sure.
And I don't know if that's you know, the English teacher in high school that doesn't grade papers and everyone loves. Like, I don't know if it's that. Or if it's just because he's, you know, a great guy and everyone just, like, they know how good a player he is. I talked to his high school coach, who's just like, yeah, by his senior year, he was a really good football player. He always had that quiet confidence. He just has that personality where you want to listen to him. You want to do well for him. And he doesn't even have to say anything. You just sort of know it. I think he's like a really genuine and earnest guy. And I think sometimes that can be as powerful as anything else. And so, you know, you go out and you win a couple of playoffs games, you give yourself a chance to go to the Super Bowl, you win a Super Bowl, he's a made man and he can do whatever else he wants. I think that would buy him some equity in the building too, don't you? Like, go out and have some success in the playoffs, and that allows you, like, Matt LaFleur's at least been to the NFC Championship a couple of times. He's had 13 win seasons. Jordan Love hasn't. So let's see it. Let's see it. And I think that would.
And I think it's, you don't have to go as extreme as like Tom Brady, maybe, like yelling at on the sidelines. But there does, like, I don't know what he is, you know, in practice, but inexcusable to drop a pass or run a wrong route. Like, I do think Jordan Love, like, there is a moment in time where you're like, hey, we'll get the next one, we got this, and a moment in time to jump on somebody and say, like, all right, that's enough. You've ran the wrong route three times, like, this practice or in this game or in the, you know, you've dropped the ball. Like, what's going on? Let's, like, this is inexcusable. I cannot, like, depend on you anymore. And I think that's kind of that next step. You can be a great dude, great leader. You can be that cool, confident. At some point, though, you got it. You have to demand it. And again, I think that if Jordan Love gets just an inkling more of that, this team can go wherever it wants to go.
And I think Micah Parsons I know we got to jump.
Yeah, but Micah Parsons is that guy.
I think Micah Parsons is that guy. And when your best player is like that, this is something we talk about with Jeff Jagosinski on our squad show all the time. Your best players have to be those guys. They have to set the tone. And I think I've been so impressed with him as a tone setter in all of this. I don't think he's the reason Rashawn Gary got traded, but I think he told us Rashawn Gary was getting traded in that last press conference that he gave.
He did.
He questioned everyone's effort. Like, that was about 52. Yep. Tell me what, like, he didn't say the words Rashawn Gary, but that's who he was talking about. And I think that carries weight in the locker room with the coaches, with the front office, when your best players are going, this is not good enough.
Yep.
Now they're not here anymore.
It's time for Jordan Love to be that guy. Peter Bukowski, Locked On Packers, thank you so much for jumping on today. We had a blast, and I think we settled a lot of things here. You know, we're ready for LaFleur and Love together to take that next step, because we as fans former Packers, reporters, whatever. We're ready to see that. So
yep.
Thank you so much for jumping on today.
All right. Thanks, guys. Later.
Appreciate you.
You bet. Peter Bukowski, Locked On Packers. Check out all this stuff. When we come back, we will recap the Final Four, some good basketball action in the Elite Eight, including a crazy ending. You all saw it. We will share our reaction to that. Coming up here on the Mason Crosby Show, he's Tommy Wirtz. I'm Mitch Nellis. He's Mason Crosby. We are the Mason Crosby Show.